I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Game of Thrones. The Walking Dead. Westworld. No, that's the West Wing. Westworld. There have been many podcasts which seek to analyse the complexities, the depth, the plot lines, the hidden story arcs, the beauty of these productions. Quite simply, the world doesn't need another one, which is why we're applying that level of discussion to the bottom of the televisual barrel and scraping it with a weekly celebration of The One Show! So we Willy Winky ran through the town, upstairs and downstairs, in his nightgown, peering through the windows, crying at the lock. And that's because he could see people inside watching The One Show on weekdays on BBC One at 7 o'clock. And it made him sick. Welcome. It's the One Show Show podcast, where we take you by the hand and lead you through a week's worth of The One Show. And uniquely, I suppose it's a podcast about television, but where you really don't have to watch the television programme that's being discussed. And frankly, it's better that you don't. We are happy to take the bullet for you. I am John Holmes, and this week, on or about the vicinity of the green sofas, there's almost a Blue Peter-based Me Too moment on the forecourt. Kylie Minogue discusses her pouch, and there's a pig in a tree. Joining me to celebrate all that and more of it is regular The One Show showman... The One Show showman, Mark Haynes, and presenter, DJ, comedian, film critic, tousle-haired scamp, it's Alex Zane. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome. So, welcome, Alex Zane. Welcome.
Hello.
Now, this is a question we always ask, of course. Are you a viewer of The One Show, or did you just do it under duress for this?
I'm not a regular viewer.
No.
I have appeared on The One Show.
Well, I know you have.
But I'm not a regular viewer of it. So what I did was I crammed. I crammed for today. I watched several episodes of The One Show back to back, which is an odd experience. I'm not going to lie. It's got such a very specific view of life that by the end of sort of watching an hour and a half of it, you find your own sort of moral compass starts to waver in favour of this almost rose-tinted view of the world.
It is beautiful. I mean, you can sort of step off the world and immerse yourself in the world of the green sofas quite easily, can't you? That's the thing. It's its own...
I mean, yeah, if it was a sort of choice to sort of live within those parameters forever and never know that something else exists, perhaps The One Show is The Matrix and you could live like that forever and you never want to see the deserts of the real, then great. But the minute you know the deserts of the real exists, you realise just how false The One Show is.
What were you on it for when you were on it?
I was on it. They asked me.
You cannot just write to them. I found this out the hard way.
Dear Jim, please.
You know, back in the day, that would have been a definite answerable letter.
Yes, it would.
Yeah. He could have made that happen.
Yeah.
They were doing a little piece on Queen. Queen had an exhibition in East London of a lot of their old memorabilia, and somehow from some interview they'd realised that I was a huge Queen fan.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, come and do this little piece, this little VT about Queen. I'm like, absolutely, actually. This is something I feel I can do on The One Show and still sort of like be a little bit of an authored piece about my love of Queen.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
they didn't ask you back then.
the point I realised I was wrong was when I was standing in the middle of this exhibition, having sort of, you know, espoused about my love for Queen, and they went, "That's great. What we really want you to do now is to jump in the air as though you're playing air guitar, and we're going to freeze frame it, and that'll be the end of the VT." And I went, "What?" And they went, "Yeah, that's." This is the one show, right? I don't know. I think you were talking like you were making an author doc on BBC Four. You're not. This is the one show. Jump in the fucking air. So I did. Yay! And that was how the VT ended. Yeah. It was me, freeze frames, jumping in the air, playing air guitar.
And look what it's led to, this podcast.
I'm coming here with revenge.
As did Jay Rayner. So you're in good company. Well, let's start. I mean, we'll talk about Monday first, because this was the Blue Peter special.
Yeah, and it's just worth saying, John, before we go any further, it might sound a little bit different, this episode of the podcast, because it's near Halloween. We've taken the decision to record this in a haunted house. So if it sounds echoey, then that isn't because we've had to move to a temporary office.
Yeah.
It's because we've put a lot of thought into this.
That's right.
And we've made it seasonal.
Yeah, that's well done for getting
that.
Oh,
look out. But listen, about
this wall. Listen to that. Office next door now going mad. Oh, that's not the office next door. That's a witch and her broom.
Oh, it's like the Ouija board we've done, and it's all etc. etc.
Is it even a wall? It's not very scary. I've never celebrated Halloween. Is that not what it's about? Whether walls are actually walls?
Blue Peter. So this was Monday's episode, and because it was the whole nation was seemingly celebrating Blue Peter at 60, they had some presenters on. They started the show before the opening titles of the one show. They did the opening theme tune to Blue Peter by going out on the streets and making the likes of market traders and just people they'd found.
Real people.
Real muggles sing the theme to Blue Peter and then cut it all together. That cut straight to the one show titles. Then they were on the forecourt with Connie Huck, Mark Curry, Sarah Green, and Simon Thingy. I can't remember which.
Sarah Green looked absolutely brilliant.
Just the same.
It hasn't aged at all. Really, actually, Connie Huck hadn't really aged at all either.
Yeah.
So I think there's some weird shit going on in Blue Peter, where they're obviously injecting them with that thing that they did Captain America. And we need them in case there's another war.
What was interesting about it, of course, that was Matt Baker, presenter of the one show, ex-Blue Peter as well. And what a lot of people were seeing was some old Blue Peter presenters on the forecourt. What I was seeing was a lineup of livid people at Matt's career now. Where Mark Curry these days? I mean, I don't...
They did show a clip of Matt Baker on Blue Peter, which I've actually seen before, because I think I've seen him saying, "It's one of the great Blue Peter bloopers, one of those great cock-ops that everybody talks about." And it's a bit where they just can't get some doors opened.
That's right.
And there's a band outside. But I watched
that. You forgot a crucial moment there. They are dressed in lederhosen.
Oh, yes, that's true. When Blue Peter had that horrible flirtation with the far right. Oh, terrible idea.
The glory days, I call them.
Blauer Peter. if anyone's saying Peter's not German, it sounds Dutch. Well, they're Dutch racists too, mate. I watched that bit and it didn't seem like they were going, "This is an old show I was on." It seemed like it could have been the one show. And I've always said this about the one show. Some people say it's Blue Peter for adults. It's just Blue Peter. And the fact that you can get the Blue Peter cast on and they can just act like they are on Blue Peter and that everyone's absolutely fine. It just seemed like Blue Peter has somehow got into the mainstream, that it's now a primetime thing for adults, whereas it used to be a kids' show.
All of the anecdotes that they told, though, during this were, as the show went on, it just became more cliquey and in. So they kept saying things to each other, forgetting they were on television. It was like they were in the pub talking about it. There was one bit when they said, do you remember Biddy's Beat Room? And they went, yeah. There was no explanation as to what that was.
But she'd kill all the dogs that got old or were disobedient.
Biddy Baxter, she's like, "Come on, Petra. This is your final walk."
There'd be the slamming like we just heard on the wall. There was one bit that they put in which I thought was, everyone pretended it was normal, but they put in an extended bit of probably the one piece of footage of Connie Huck in a bikini.
Oh, yeah.
And it showed her sort of running in a bikini through snow. I thought that was a bit weird. Yeah. That was a bit of a creepy thing to do.
It also then led to Sarah Green seemingly forgetting how television works, right? Because she then said, and you're right, it was that classic clip, you know, where Connie is in a freezing lake. They cut a hole in the ice. She has to jump in, then run across the snow and get in a hot tub, right? And, you know, and it's all very yellow bikini, isn't it? And the point of the piece was obviously that's what they do in that country, wherever they were, Norway, Sweden, something, an Arctic Circle. And then Sarah Green was just going at her. While Matt was trying to carry on presenting, Sarah Green's just going, neoprene! Why weren't you in neoprene?
She doesn't understand TV. No, she also doesn't understand time.
She wasn't supposed to be in neoprene. The point was the bikini.
Connie, 16 years ago, neoprene, love. 16 years ago. Set your watch monitor for 16 years ago. Neoprene.
But that brought me to my handbrake turn of the week.
Ah.
Right, so this is where they went from that VT, clips of Old Blue Peter, and Sarah Green missing the point of the item, to the turn to camera, and Matt Baker just was it. Now, the Man Booker Prize. And then he went, just to link it in, he just went, sadly, Blue Peter Annual, not eligible. So here's a film about bookbinding.
None of it's connected.
And then there was.
Well, that's your handbrake turn of the week. I think mine comes later, which I'm sure we're going to talk about.
No, please do it now.
Which is the bit where he goes from a piece, an interview with the young girl who's starring in The Hate U Give. And he's done the opening interview with her, who was also...
Yeah, Amandla Stenberg.
Amandla Stenberg, that's right. And he's talked to her, and she was in The Hunger Games as well. And he goes, she comes off the back and he goes, it's time to for our first film, which is a game that's been put together by a group of school children. It's as far as you can get from The Hunger Games. And I went, is it? You mean it's not people, children, fighting to the death with weapons and or poison in an arena in the future, Matt?
That's a film they've got on next week on The One Show. They're lining that one up. What episode was that in then? That was on...
That was the 17th.
It was Thursday's
episode.
Worth saying, this is probably the only appearance that Tupac Shakur has made on The One Show. There was a big photograph of him when she was talking about her film, which is called The Hate U Give, and a picture of Tupac just flashed up off the back of a sort of thing. I think it was like a documentary strand about glass.
They do have a weird fascination with almost trying to outdo the pieces that they're putting on. Like there was the episode this week where they've got Peter Jackson. It's a brilliant piece. The bits about where he's colorized World War One footage, taken it black and white, made it color, and it's fantastic. And they come off the back of it and they go, that's incredible. Isn't that incredible what he's achieved with that World War One footage? And then they've got Roger Daltrey and they've colorized some Who footage.
That's right.
And it's almost like they're going, yeah, we can do it too.
Yeah. It was shit, wasn't it? It was Peter Jackson, the detail, the level of detail looked incredible. And then this crap, just shit graphics package where they just put an old black and white photo of the Who. And
they have got a funny relationship now with the VTs where they don't really sort of like talk about them very much. They just sort of go, oh, we've got to stop the fun because here's a VT about an owl sanctuary. And then it'll come back and they'll go, twit to woo. So, Amandla, we were talking, rudely interrupted there by a VT. But they've got a funny relationship with it now.
But it's also, it's that level, we've talked about this before, where they know. And with that colourisation bit, Matt came off the back of the shit Who colouring. Shit, that sounds like the owl as well, doesn't it? Shit Who. Shit Who.
Matt, it's if anything, it's twit twit.
And he just said, oh, we had a bit of fun with the colourisation. Oh! We had a bit of fun there with the colourisation. Well, we saw what you did.
But... I mean, Matt Baker isn't that old. Does he get to work and they go, Matt, your language on the show has become a little too youthful. Here's the book we gave you at the start of this job where you have to use phrases that only dads use in real life. Like, we just had a little bit of fun there. You're not that old. You would never normally say that. I mean, this whole start of the episode was just so surreal. Because like they've got Roger Daltrey there, and then they play the Who footage and they colorize it, and then they come off the back and Roger Daltrey's they're like, oh, look at that, and he's like, oh yeah, it looks like my sister. But like, he doesn't sort of specify that he thought he looked like his sister. It sort of has the idea that his sister looks like 1966 footage of The Who performing by a riverbank.
Yeah, yeah, but really badly painted on. She's terrible with makeup. It looks like my sister. It's all the wrong.
Going to pretend as well that Roger Daltrey looked in some way normal. Right? He looked like a bear cub that had been shaved and they were passing it off as a guest. Massive great gnashers that are bright white. He's wearing his fucking sunglasses as well, just in case you didn't know he was a rock star when you were tuning in. And then you go, oh no, he's got his job. Oh, he must be. He had too much makeup on as well, and it looked a bit like, you know, in the Batman films where the Joker would put on flesh coloured makeup and it would come off a bit and you'd see it was the Joker.
Even Jack Nicholson does it. Yeah, Jack Nicholson did it in the 1989 Batman, and you're like, ooh.
They are all slowly looking like Jack Nicholson in Batman, aren't they? Rock stars.
It's growing
They've
into
all
it.
Gone for that look.
But that bit of fun that the one show had with that footage, I mean, what it actually was Baker goes, we put you in a pink shirt there, Roger. Little bit of fun. It's like, I'm not sure how that's fun.
I'm no puff. Nice one, Rog. Real funny because we put you in a pink shirt, calling you a puff. The level of the one show's jokes.
He wouldn't explain as well, because then they asked him about his book, which he was there to plug, obviously. I'd heard him trot out the same interview about four times that week.
Are we not going to mention the fact that the book's got the worst title?
Thanks a lot, Mr. Kibblewhite.
Absolutely. Roger, this will surprise you. There was no ghostwriter involved, so he made all the decisions himself. Thanks a lot, Mr. Kibblewhite.
Actually, there was, because he shouted out to the ghostwriter.
Did he?
Yeah. He said, I work with Matt Rudd from the Sunday Times.
Oh, he did. You're right. Yes,
immediately texted and went, you just got a shout out on the one show. And and that's made Matt now listen to this podcast, by the way. Hello, Matt.
By the way, Matt's been working with Roger Daltrey for the past year and he's excited he's been mentioned on the one show. This is all wrong.
I mean, again, it's such a one show way that they actually introduced the concept of this book, because Angela doesn't go, oh, so you've written a book. He's sort of talking about like how the Beatles, it's quite fascinating. He starts talking about the Beatles and how Love Me Do really changed everything. It was the key in the ignition for the music scene. And off the back of that, she goes, great, but you're here today as an author. Almost like that God, we all know you're in The Who. But
well, there was that other really weird bit as well where Matt said, he was talking about the band. So he was saying something. I got lucky, Roger was saying. I got lucky in finding the rest of the band. And then Matt leant forward and interrupted. And he just went, Pete Townsend, John Entwistle, Keith Moon. Roger looked really confused at that. He's like, we know.
Thank you. After 50 years, I feel enlightened.
And Roger, two of them are dead. he also kept on mentioning about how violent they were.
Yeah.
And he was really talking about that, like, oh, it was brilliant. Well, you know, I mean, a load of these bands were for dancing. We were all about fighting. And Matt had to sort of sit there and go, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, lovely stuff.
But it's around that bit that he sort of loses it a little bit and he starts hitting his knees. It's all on the one beat. One. And he's smacking his knee, and Matt goes, so just tell us. And he's like, one.
I did like the bit where he just also said, oh, I've got a book deal. Yeah, no fucking shit. Who'd have presumed that would happen? Famous rock star.
It got a bit awkward when Angela said, they were talking about the violence and the smashing of the instruments. And she said something like, you were mixing with the Beatles and famous stars, but you have said, this is like, you could see research flying from the back of her mind to the forefront, going, I've got a thing I know about Roger Daltrey. And she said, you've said in the past that Jimi Hendrix took some of your gimmicks. And I was thinking, yeah, the smashing of the guitars and stuff, fair enough. And then she went, he also almost took your wife.
Oh, yes!
It's amazing.
He went, no, we were all friends.
Yeah!
Meaning, we just passed everything around, it was fine. Yeah. Joints, wives, guitar, didn't matter.
It was a really strange one, because he was a bit like, what the fuck are you, where are you going with this?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, he had to tell a story about how he sort of won his wife.
in a rock and roll contest.
Our new researcher on the one show is Jeremy Paxman.
It's a funny thing where she went in there and she thought, this is the same as saying to him, what's it like to write a book? I understand that your wife was nearly stolen away from you.
But
how tall are you?
That's the brilliant thing, because I think Matt Baker runs his questions. Like, he'll just get questions from the researchers who sort of just go, these are the questions. And he sort of puts them through the Matt Baker filter and sort of edits out the sort of almost accusatory tone of some of the questions. And I don't think some of the other hosts on it do that. They just sort of go, this question is fine as is on the page and sort of like parrot it to the guest.
I think Angela Scanlon, I think you're absolutely right about that, because I think she's sort of gone, there's an opening here for me. I get given this and it's Alex. What do I do quite well? I'm actually a bit hip. I'm a bit sort of challenging. I'm a bit naughty. And that's going to be my role. And you can see it every time she asks a question. There'll be a little bit of a dig there that's going, I'm working quite hard at this compared to other people.
Yeah.
I think she's really lining herself up to take this over. Have you ever worked with Angela Scanlon?
I haven't.
Well, let's get her on here. I'm sure that she'd come and do this. Come on, Angela. We know you're listening. We know you all do. This is an open invitation.
We will literally allow you to spend 20 minutes just slagging off Alex Jones to our face. We'll edit it all out. No one will be any the wiser. Get it out of your system.
But you will have to watch the one show.
That deal's off.
In the same episode, so this was, you know, that's Daltrey's there, isn't he? Daltrey's in, plugging his book, plugging his fighting and his guitars and his wife swapping. But then there was we talked about something similar that happened before, where they said, we continue now our series of films where Marty Jobson or somebody, we continue our series of films where Marty Jobson tries to find the science behind some common phrases. And I'm going, so this is another series of films. And even though I've been relentlessly watching the one show now,
the best part of a year,
I've not seen any others in this series.
Is this the one he opened with the question, why is glass see-through when the material of this table isn't?
Yes, that's the one.
Just to give the man his dues, it's Marty Jossop. And I can't believe he's approached the one show and gone, I've got an idea for a series of films that is taking age-old adages and making a three-minute feature out of them. Because apparently the whole thinking behind that package is if you throw a rock in a glass house, like in the expression, will the glass break?
Right. Yeah. Do you know what? Yeah. I missed what the question was.
That was it. So all these films, this series of films, you're absolutely right, Alex, are based on proverbs and sayings, right?
I thought it was like the question was, is learning about glass boring? And then he spent 3 minutes answering
very much in the affirmative. It was if people live in glass houses, should they throw stones?
Right.
That was their way into a film about glassmaking and toughened glass, right? It was a film about toughened glass. That's all it was. I mean, yeah. I genuinely haven't seen any others. I can't wait for the Cook's Broth one. Put your money where your mouth is, where Marty Jotface, whatever his name is, he's just having tenors jammed into his throat until he choked.
I'm at the top of this moss-covered hill.
With Charlie Watts, drummer from a popular band.
But that is the kind of thing I think Charlie Watts would be fascinated by. I am in.
Yeah, well, I've managed to gather some moss. Back to you. It's worth saying again, we've neglected to talk about what Marty looks like. A turn of the century Belgian gin mascot. A 1970s ghost in a children's sitcom obsessed with sex.
Wee Willy Winky.
Yeah. Wee Willy Winky's pervert uncle. He is the strangest looking man on television. Some of his questions. The question isn't, why is glass see-through? But why isn't everything see-through?
It's like...
It's like, Marty, stick to the script.
My question is, why aren't all clothes see-through? That's what I want. That's what I want now. I want it all see-through. Will this glass sustain the force of my spunk? It might be bulletproof, but is it Marty-proof?
Let him get it out. Let him get it out, and then we'll start filming. Don't press record yet. He does this every week.
Let it be made clear that everyone we talk about on this is not a real person. They're entirely fictitious.
That's right.
Similarities between people living or dead is entirely coincidental.
Well pointed out, yeah.
He then
we're not saying he is that. We say he looks like that. Yeah, that's always
true. That's fair comment.
Thank you.
I like the bit where he got a load of shot putters to throw shot puts against bullet-resistant glass.
Yeah. Because it got really... Because I sort of switched off when that was on. I was like, this is... What is this? And then they brought out guns. And then there was footage of bullets hitting the glass.
Yeah, I thought it was going to get exciting.
And I was like,
yeah.
This is good. They're doing bullets smashing through glass on the one... Excellent. And they went, obviously, we don't have guns ourselves. We've got shot puts.
They got knives last week when they were trying to stab Maisie Williams in the throat.
I like the way that the British equivalent of a gun is a shot put. As if we go to war with shot puts, like something out of fucking Lord of the Rings.
I'm actually starting a petition for the police to be armed with shot puts. Except the problem is that in America, most deaths actually of police officers come from their own shot put.
The fear. Fear of missing out. Fear of going out. Fear of flying. Fear of dying. Imposter syndrome. Spiders. Pipes from Ghostwatch. Dolls with buttons for eyes. We're all scared of something. But what are you scared of? Join me, Sarah Morgan, for The Fear, a podcast about the overlap between comedy and horror. The secret lemonade drinker adverts. Geese. That time on Biker Grove when Ag McParlin got shot in the face with a paintball. In each episode, I interview funny, interesting people I like, people like Phil Jupitus, Alice Lowe, Richard Osman, Riley Silverman, and Danielle Ward, about their biggest fears in a judgment-free environment. It is spooktacular.
The Fear.
And remember, do have nightmares because they're an entirely appropriate response to the horrors of modern living.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Rule of Three, a podcast about comedy. I'm Joel Morris.
I'm Jason Hazley.
And as usual, we're joined by someone who makes comedy to talk about something funny that they love.
Martin's voice
really
jumped up
just
onto
emerged.
My back and sneaked round to the side of my neck and went down my throat and then came out again. And suddenly, there he was.
I think I'm the only scaffolder or ex-scaffolder to have been on a BAFTA-type stage.
There's more money in faces.
There's more money in faces, but there's no control. That's what I like.
I can't control your face.
I can't control where I put my face.
And Rory sort of pitched to James, can flute be the last word? Because I think that's the funniest word to end on. And James went, I know it is, and that's why I don't want it to be at the end.
But there's this idea that there's a limited amount of space for funny. It's like when men think they have to go out with someone who's not funny. As if, like, but if she's funny, what'll I do? You're like, you'll both laugh! You will both have a laugh!
You mentioned there that this was where you zoned out. And I think that's fair enough. But it brings us to the dullest segment of the week. Mark, did you have a dullest segment of the week?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yes,
God.
Yes,
which was it? Let's see. I've got two. Okay. And I can't decide between them.
I think I'd probably go for the long VT about chamomile being grown in England. And the guy at one point said, it's supposed to help people sleep. Well, this video is very much the visual equivalent of chamomile. Either that one or UK Tree of the Year.
There you go. That's what I wrote
down
as well.
The winner will go through to European Tree of the
Year. Woo! But even when they introduced, they threw to it and they said later on the show, we're going to be finding out the Tree of the Year. Even the studio audience, who normally are sort of shot put proof to this kind of stuff, right? Because they're used to it. Even they sort of did a sort of, oh, that's fucking shit, laugh, didn't they? There was a sort of, even Matt had to acknowledge that the words coming out of his mouth weren't the best.
We're going to put some funny music behind you, Matt, because they do. They've got the like a green sleeves kind of track playing behind him as he announces it. But they almost set it up like it was ridiculous, because just before it, they went full Fast and Furious. They had a car drifting, like spinning its wheels on the forecourt, and they're like, look at that! Isn't that exciting? There's a Tree of the Year VT as well. But look at the car again!
And it's the way they did it. You just said, we'll be revealing we'll be revealing the four trees shortlisted for UK's Tree of the Year. Shall we run through them? Did you write them down?
I didn't write them
down. Oh, this is very exciting.
John, I wanted to die when it was on. No, relive it.
He also had his little joke in. He just said, they've been whittled down to a shortlist. So number one...
All joking aside, please do not whittle the Trees of the Year.
And he said, it's up to you to decide. And then they went on. Number one, Nelly's tree. Nelly's tree is three saplings that a man wove together in a forest years ago. And now they've grown together to form the letter N that the locals call the love tree for his love, who was called Nelly. That's that. Wales had a giant tree, the giant circumference, which was planted to commemorate the Battle of Bosworth in Wales, whereas Bosworth's about 200 miles away from there.
They did say reportedly planted.
Mighty Josser wants to do a VT. Like, come down my reenactment society. We're doing the Battle of Bosworth.
My favourite phrase in that, though, in the 70s, a local farmer housed a pig in the tree.
Yes, and they didn't mention anything more on that.
No.
But that was the fact. The one fact they went through, they go, we need at least three facts.
Yeah.
And someone go, once a pig got in there, and they go, that is a good fact.
Yeah.
That is a good fact. A pig got in tree.
Yeah.
Great.
Great. And that's all you've got on that. Mention the Bosworth thing. That's 200 miles away. Doesn't matter. Throw it in. Throw it in. Giant redwood was Northern Islands. It's a tree with 19 trunks.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
19 trees, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I'm going to make this point. If it has 19 trunks, now I'm no expert on trees, but let me tell you, you don't have to be. That's 19 trees.
No, that's not a tree. It's a copse.
Disqualify it. Disqualify
yeah,
it.
Yeah. And Nettie's tree, not to be confused with Nelly's, was in Scotland, the only tree on an island or something.
Yeah. And it wasn't a great tree.
It was a shit tree.
It was a really poor tree.
There's more islands with a tree on it.
This particular island.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's so... Yeah. I mean, come on, Alex, we've just had one that is there because a pig went in.
You know.
I'm not going to lie. I find that quite exciting. I want to know more. That's the first fact that I... Because I don't remember them saying that, but I'm like... Who owned the pig? Did it climb the tree? Did it just nestle
now,
in the tree?
Save this for UK Pig of the Year. Right? The winner is the pig that went in a tree. Worth saying, they said at the end, and we've got a fine yew tree to finish with, which is never a phrase you want to hear when you work at the BBC.
I was just thinking, a previous winner. Operation Yew Tree a couple of years ago.
Does it grow photographs of the people who've been arrested on his front?
And when we say a pig's been circling it, it was a policeman. this episode had a lot. There was a lot in this show.
Mm.
Rick Wakeman was on this show, which I very much...
I loved it. The one show struggles when they bring a guest on who's kind of real and like doesn't sort of go... Right, I'm on TV. I better think about the fact I'm on TV. Like, when Angela Scanlon, like, he's talking about his head teacher. And he's like, my head teacher didn't think I'd become anything. And Angela Scanlon goes, oh, where is he now? And Rick Wimmer goes, I know exactly where he is. He's dead. And like, you can see Matt Baker go, oh, God, it's going to be one of those shows.
It was really good. Yeah.
It was really funny, but people were like, oh, no, we've got a live one here.
Proper guest.
When Catherine Tate is talking about postnatal depression, because that's why you booked Catherine Tate. he just, like, halfway through, she's like, a friend of mine, she had a very difficult birth. And then Rick Wakeman blows his nose really loudly, just behind
her. Though to the director, so there, you know, because obviously it was on Catherine Tate and it was that moment, you're right, there was a massive loud parping noise and the director just cut to a wide so you could see Wakeman sort of snotting into his hanky because he'd obviously thought, oh, there's a tight shot on Catherine there, I can just get away with that. No, the director had to go, I've got to show you what's going on, because otherwise
this
is awful. I was
so desperate to see him looking it before he put it back in.
they got to Wakeman, by the way, we should mention, out of the trees by just going something like, oh, Rick Wakeman, you like trees.
Yeah.
Yep. And then he did.
Yeah.
Rick Wakeman, you've seen a pig.
that was the example of the researcher who got it right. But later with Catherine Tate, she made, she was telling a story about how, because of the amount of clothes that she wears in her show, which are then taken off between things,
she was
sort of saying, I wear about 3 stone.
This was a brilliant insight, wasn't it, into, and we've all been on the receiving end of these calls, where the researcher from a show, before you go on, it will ring you up and go through what's expected of you.
And Catherine Tait was telling a story about these quick changes she does. And she was saying the actual costumes that she has on, that she basically comes off stage, they're ripped off, she goes back on as a different character. They weighed 3 stone. So she said, so basically I'd start the show and by the end I'd have lost 3 stone. And the researcher had gone, and you do that every night. You lose 3 stone. And it obviously got into the notes that every night performing her show, Catherine Tait loses 3 stone of her body weight through the sheer exertion. And so Catherine Tait had sort of gone, you had a very nice researcher, not very bright. If I did my show 4 times, I wouldn't be here. She said, bit of a humiliating impression there. Apologies.
Pretty good.
Apologies to all people.
It was a good moment. There was also, again, same program, because there was a lot in this, where they were recreating Smash Hits magazine.
Yes,
because
that's right.
Because of some reason. Kate Thornton had been dragged out of wherever Kate Thornton is.
The ground.
Yeah. And told to recreate a Smash Hits cover. But here's the weird thing. At the beginning of the program, they showed a clip of Kylie Minogue answering a question, which was, if you had a pouch like a kangaroo, Kylie, what would you put in it?
Yeah.
Kylie giggled. We didn't get the answer. But then for the rest of the show, they were teasing as to which big guest was going to be on the cover of Smash. We'd already seen it.
Yeah, that was really badly put together.
Already seen it.
And also, they announced it on the previous episode as well. They went, Kylie Minogue recreates the cover of Smash.
Oh, my Lord.
For the whole fucking show, they were going, oh, who's it going to be?
That was the only time I saw Matt Baker go, no, we're not doing that. Because Angela Scanlon goes, yeah, after the pouch announcement. Oh, there's a... goes, yeah, what would you keep in your pouch? And he's like, that wasn't in the script. Stop. Yeah. That wasn't in the script. He's like, that'd be telling.
That's a shame, because when they said, we're going to find out what's in your pouch, he turned after that little VT and went, it's actually a good question.
Kylie was presented during the little VT she did with Kate Thornton. They talked for a bit about the famous Smash It biscuit tin, which I didn't remember from reading Smash Hits as a kid, but
I vaguely did. But it wasn't a great big thing they did. It was the question that they'd have each fortnight, and it would just say questions from the biscuit tin, and they'd have a big star, and there'd be a biscuit tin. They'd be taking the questions out. Now there was a story about Meatloaf
loved it,
loving the biscuit tin.
That's right.
I think that's one of those things where Meat was just being very kind to everyone.
I think
he loved
the biscuits. And the biscuit tin.
And the tin.
But Kylie, they presented it to Kylie. And again, an example of not warning of what was going on, because they presented it to Kylie saying, oh, we've got the famous biscuit tin. And she, very professional, just went, oh, what's in it? She didn't remember the tin.
It would have been so much better if she'd gone, throw your own fucking rubbish away.
Well, there were biscuits, but Meatloaf's outside.
Yeah, I'm Kylie. I am literally not interested in biscuits.
Oh, she could have so nailed that as well.
What's a biscuit?
If you were a kangaroo, Kylie, what would you keep in your pouch? And she was, I wanted to go, Michael Hutchence's cock.
I was going to go a load of plastic surgeons calling cards, but I actually thought to myself, no, I'm not going to be mean. Well, shouldn't have bothered. Should have waded straight in.
Welcome to my world.
They had 2 ladies who had met through the RSVP section of Smash Hits on the show as well, and they were not that, I don't know, I thought they were going to be really happy and really like, we've had such good, yay, it's just been a boon, and we're the spirit of Smash Hits. And the only line I wrote down them saying was, one of them turned to the other and went, we've had some tough times. Keep it light, ladies.
Yes, we've been through it with each other through thick and thin.
Yeah, really, yeah. It's the biscuit tin.
But they bonded over Duran Duran, didn't they? And that went into this weird segment of what posters did you have on your wall? And they both had Duran Duran. And then, but then they said, but you never met them. And I thought, oh, this is going to be...
I thought the same thing.
They're going to bring Simon Le Bon. He's either in the studio behind the thing.
They thought the same thing.
Or they did. Or there's a VT of Simon saying, hello, ladies. You never managed to meet them. You're biggest fans, but you never managed to meet Duran Duran, did you? And they went, no, we didn't. Anticipation builds. And then they just moved on.
Well, today is no different from all the other days.
Although, here's Rick Wakeman's handkerchief.
Something that you learned from the one show this week, and I learned from this, that Catherine Tait likes wallpaper.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Turns out Catherine Tait, what posters did you have on your walls growing up? She went, well, I didn't have any. I just liked wallpaper.
Yeah, that's quite a sweet answer. I learnt that chess is compulsory in 300 maintained schools in Britain, and that's maintained is state schools. Chess is a compulsory subject in 300 of them. You know, people are saying about how dangerous it's going to be post-Brexit and everything, but we've got a load of kids who can play chess, and that's something they can do to take their mind off the food shortages and the fact there's no medicine.
I really like that little V2 about the chess playing in that school.
You like chess, don't you? You're a big chess player.
Well, you see, because I went to a conference, it was weird because... Because I think the whole VT is sort of set up like this this state school from a deprived area, like, and they're learning chess and they're playing against the posh kids from the private school down the road, and it really sets up like they're gonna win, and it's gonna be about these kids, and they came like 18th out of 20, and I was like, oh, that's a little disappointing. I think I bought into it like you buy into a sports drama, but then I remembered I was captain of my chess club at my comprehensive school because I didn't have enough things that made me a geek already. Ready at that point. A briefcase, captain of the chess team, massively into tabletop wargaming. I was the captain, and we played a private school down the road, and we lost. And I was like, this is moving. This is touching.
There's something funny about there not being a fake resolution to this, where it does become that thing of you can be anything you want to be, where they just go, yeah, they've got it, and they're taking on the best, and they've come 18th. And that's a nice reflection of real life.
And you see, and there was something about that, because sometimes I find some of the VT so cloying. That seemed really good. It put my back up at the start, because I was like, I was ready for a guy in a suit with all the chess pieces on it. When they went, this is Mr. Chess. And he was just a bloke going, yeah, some people call me that. They haven't done for a while, though. You're not going to use that in the piece, are you? We need you to actually say it. Oh, God, I'm Mr. Chess. But he was really good. And I thought that was nice. I like that bit.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. This isn't just to slag it off, as we've said. This is a celebration. Yeah, yeah.
I tell you, though, if we're talking about the best piece that was on this week, oh, my, it actually made me cry. I welled up and I cried and I turned. My wife was absolutely in floods of tears. Matt was presenting. No. There was a section on Thursday which is about a cartoonist called Gary Andrews.
Right.
And he lost his wife, and he's an illustrator who'd previously worked at Disney, and he begun keeping a diary where he'd do a sketch every single day. And after his wife died, I think he had one day off, which was the day that she actually died, and then he carried on. And he's got two daughters, and he began drawing these pictures. And they are really sort of sweet and nice, and they're all about grief and how he's going through the grieving process. And they put together a little animation, and it had all the things you shouldn't have found particularly emotional. There was a sort of Enya-esque bit of music playing behind it. Yeah. And it was
That his wife had composed as well.
Yeah.
She composed that piece.
And he's going through his sketchbook, and they've animated his drawings quite sort of swiftly and everything. And oh my, if you watch that and you don't have tears appear in your eyes, then you need to see a doctor, because you have no heart.
Yeah.
It was absolutely gutting. And it came back. Angelica Bell, tears in her eyes.
Right.
The guy himself, the cartoonist, he was welling up. The person sitting next to him on the sofa, they were welling up. It was a proper good emotional punch. Now, you know, we get a lot of wrongly directed tweets to our account.
Yes.
Our account is at The One Show Show. The BBC account is at BBC The One Show. So we get loads and loads and loads of tweets that are made for that. Now, I know I sound like I'm from the BBC here. We simply never received as many tweets as we did in relation to that one episode where people were going, this is absolutely more of this, please. So in the spirit
Mark,
of
they might have been talking about our podcast.
It made me cry. It said, where are the women? It said again and again. But I think in fairness to The One Show, they should know that, yeah, we actually had a massive response from that.
Their social media editors sitting there going, we got nothing on this. This was heart-rending.
They're still going on about the fact that we had Maisie Williams murdered last week in a knife fight. You should have seen that. It was a fucking disaster.
That's worth looking up.
It was a brilliant. It was. Do you know what it was? It reminded me of the montage from Up. If you've watched the montage, yeah. Except obviously this was real. But it was this perfect like 3.5 minute animation. And I agree. I thought it was really.
It was
really
absolutely
good.
Again, you don't want to give production notes to The One Show. It's too late. It's a little bit about like giving healthcare tips to Bernard Manning's family, you know. But more of that. Ordinary people just being amazing.
I like the ordinary people thing. It's really good when people get in touch. You know, they do the call out for get in touch with us about this subject, and it was. It was off the bat. They clearly planned it. It was when Roger Daltrey was saying how one of his teachers, the guy on the cover.
The headmaster, yeah.
Had gone, as he was being expelling him, he was going, you're never going to make a success of yourself. And Roger Daltrey took that as a sort of, which was, actually, I thought Roger Daltrey was a really good guest because it was that whole thing about, you know, that really motivated me to actually do something. And then they came off that story and they planned it. And Matt goes, so, you know, if you're a teacher who taught, basically, like, if you're a teacher who taught an awful child who has then gone on to have much more success than you and prove you wrong, let us know.
Which I thought was
a really dangerous thing, because he's like, keep it short, keep your bitterness to a couple of sentences.
I mean, there's every chance this is illegal, but let's have a go.
But it did at the end. I was like, oh, you're going to get some vile things going. I really hated this awful child. But the best one was... the best one at the end of the show was where a teacher's written this. It was, I had to keep telling a child to calm down and stop shouting. It was Brian Blessed.
There was another good one in there, which was just a teacher who said, I was Alex Jones's teacher and I always had to tell her to stop talking. And I can relate to that. Alex, shut up. Stop.
So let's any other business, shall we? That's what we like to do. So things that we may have missed, things that we hadn't talked about yet. I am going to mention the Doppel.
Ooh, that rings a bell, and I can't remember.
A stress reducing wrist gadget.
Yes. Oh, I totally tuned out when that was on.
So did I. It was most boring. So essentially, it's a gadget. All I heard was they had some hidden cameras. Some students who were told they got to do some public speaking in a minute. They got 5 minutes to prepare, and they put a wrist gadget on them to test their stress levels. And the idea is this gadget mimics a heartbeat to fool your brain into thinking you're not anxious, and thus you don't start to sweat or panic, which is all very well in that situation. But if you're having a heart attack, your brain would probably want to know about it. So it mimics a heartbeat that's not having any kind of stress at all. That's going to kill people, isn't it?
I stopped watching that when they said, we've got these special things which reduce stress, but could they just be making the stress worse? And I thought, well, choose a fucking side. I don't want to hear every side of this product that I've literally never heard of until now. Does it work? Doesn't it? Great. Move on. They had another bit about technology, which was about the co-op. Where you could take your iPhone in. Yep. And this was like a government film, like when they brought in decimalization. This seemed something that you sort of... I've immediately got it. All right, you can go around and scan with your phone and it's attached to your bank account. Done. 5 minutes of that. 5 minutes expounding on that, getting people to try it out.
Presenter's mum had a go at it.
Oh, God, who's faster?
But it was a film. So we've got a film now. This was on the Roger Daltrey episode as well, wasn't it? Where they'd been quite interesting Roger Daltrey, as we've said. And they just went, well, here's a film.
Yep. They do often put the worst films with the best guests.
Yeah.
Sort of even it all out.
Here's a film about supermarket till technology. We're
very worried people out there might really enjoy the whole of this show. So we need to take some precautions to make sure it's always bad.
I agree. I was really surprised at that. You've got Roger Daltrey and he's being a fascinating guest and he's got some great stories and you're cutting away to a film about scanning barcodes. I mean, that is really what that film was about. And the weird thing was, it was 5 minutes. Like, you sat through this whole thing of people saying the same thing over and over again. You can just scan it. You don't have to queue. You don't have to go to the checkout. You don't have to queue. They had talking heads at the end who were still saying the same thing. It's like, if you could just reiterate that you don't have to queue. You don't have to queue. You don't have to queue. I like it. You don't have to queue. I'm like, I get it. You don't fucking have to queue. But then they come back to the studio and all three of them, Roger Daltrey, Matt Baker and Angela, they all basically go, I wouldn't use that. I'm a people person. I'd go to the checkout. I'd definitely go to the checkout. Roger, he's like, yeah, I'd go to the checkout. Yeah, Angela, yeah. It's a weird thing. You're like, 5 minutes.
But also, I was just screaming at the television, shoplifting.
Oh, absolutely.
You trust people to come into the co-op. What? And just... What? You don't have to queue. You don't have to queue.
Imagine.
You don't even have to pay, apart from on your phone. Oh, I've got the app, definitely. Look at me rubbing my phone on
a
sausage.
If you're a security man at the co-op, you are going to hear the following phrase about 15,000 times a day, which is, yeah, no, I think there must have been a problem with the Wi-Fi. You're going to hear that as people go out with 16 Christmas turkeys on their back. Yeah, no, it must be. It's not picking up, but it was connecting when I went in.
But I thought they've got to answer the question. Someone's got to ask them at some some point, what about shoplifting? And sure enough, near the end of the VT, they did. Was it the manager of that particular shop? Or
yeah,
some...
she was sort of like a local representative. Yeah,
exactly, a regional manager.
She was very good at management speak.
She certainly was.
Because they put her behind the tills, though, to make it look like she'd been in that shop. Yeah,
but there were
before.
No queues, though, were there? No queues. No queue. And they said, what about shoplifting? Like, here we go. This is where they tell us about the technology that this app contains.
There's a giant spike that will come out of your phone. It will go through one of your eyes and into your brain.
And push the turkeys back onto the shelf. And I thought, here we go. They're going to explain it. And she just sort of went, oh, I don't think people will shoplift. Are you in the real world?
Oh, my God. Because the question I was asking, I was doing the same thing. I was going, but it means more people are going to be out of a job. Surely it means more people are going to be out of a job. Surely they're not going to need as many staff. And at the very end, in the same interview, someone went, but surely, you know, people are going to be out of a job. And the woman went, No, they're not. So, and then they were like, they were happy
that
with that. There was no
is
follow-up
an acceptable question. Answer. Yeah. Okay, no more questions.
No shoplifting, no job. Oh, no, lots of job. Oh, okay, fine.
People will be listening to this going, oh, yeah, the co-op. I remember then. Yeah. Didn't they run that thing with the phone for a week and everything got looted?
It was a turkey-free Christmas for most people because one person made off with the lot.
32,000.
I mentioned the beginning of this podcast, the Blue Peter Me Too moment. Did you notice that?
No.
So this was outside. So this sort of brings us full circle, really. On the forecourt, the beginning of Monday's show, where Mark Curry and Sarah Green and Connie Hook and Simon Thing were, and Gabby Logan was presenting. And it was really quite awkward for a moment because they were all reminiscing about Blue Peter, as they did for the whole show.
And she's an outsider.
Yeah, she was an outsider. Yes. So that to get her involved, it turned out she'd done gymnastics aged about 12 or 16 or something on the Blue Peter. So they showed a clip of her twirling about in a leotard. And then they said, but we're going to give you an honorary Blue Peter. Did you have a Blue Peter badge? Yes, she said, I lost it. Mm. So they'd obviously found that out in research. So then Mark Curry had been given a Blue Peter badge to give to Gabby Logan. On live television, he then attempted to pin it onto her, right? But, you know, where badges traditionally go, in the breast area, right? And he fumbled about. And he sort of said, I don't want to damage your dress. Like that. And I'm thinking, oh, no. And then even she just sort of, and he sort of went, and she sort of took it out of his hands and just sort of said, I'll put it on later.
Another classic Blue Peter blooper moment.
And then she shit on the floor like that. Alex Zane, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for having me.
Going through that for us. Mark, thank you.
Thank you, John.
And remember this. Remember two things. One, rate and review, always important, on wherever you get your podcast.
5 stars. Anything else doesn't count.
That's right. Then also remember this. When you look at the television to look at the One Show also looks back into you. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.